I'm E.
I'm Rob.
And I'm Luke.
Welcome to the next movement, folks.
In the best state around the rest, never did a damn cuff. Store star, all hobs in the cars, play flush. Germs all saying much, learn more, staying hush. Blind trying to sweep me under rug till damn dust. Strength keep lying, took a week, now I say it's rush. Lush master strokes, it's the way I brush. Worst stir, didn't have the nerve, couldn't stand touch. Spirit light as feather, heavier wind, just dawn. Don't be cold, don't be sun, we was mourning. Here straining, ain't raining, we was pouring. Stay tight, knit. Weaving, not yawning, no end when it begins. War never wanted, got big, strong, lived on Decatur, never catered to. Recall my ball force, made it true since 82. Epic warrior, epic like native Sioux. Especially since my baby powder, I made it through. Foul ignite, with bright, my eye diminished. The face of freedom, I live inside the blemish. Be smart, don't start if can't decide to finish. With prowess, took hours, not provide the limits. So we know, chop us down before we go. Hatred is always shown. One day, hope they reap all they sown.
So this is our chit chat about the best of the best in 2022. And normally we do things a bit different when we're talking about year end. When we do year end episodes, we talk about our favorite projects for a given year. So we would have normally done this in December of 2022, but this time around we did things a little bit differently and switched it up. So now we're talking about our favorite projects of 2022 in January of 2023. So here we are.
I want to just clarify. I mean, I think best is kind of a loaded term, so I feel the need to kind of clarify.
Okay.
I think these are just our favorites.
Favorite.
In our humble opinion.
The best in according to us,
there
which makes it our opinion.
Okay.
They're not ranked. They're not, you know, there's no numeric value next to these. They're the best of what we thought were the best according to our tastes and
our humble
opinion. So,
yes, there we go.
Yes, so there you are. So to carry on the tradition of inviting folks in for this conversation, folks that also host a podcast, we are joined by Luke of Fly Fidelity. And it's so nice to have you here, Luke.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, I really appreciate you guys having me. I've been a fan of what you guys have been doing for a while now and really grateful for the invite.
Yeah.
Glad to
have
you.
Absolutely. We really respect what you do. And mm-hmm. and so it's really nice to have you here with us. So I would say most of the people who listen to us on a regular basis probably know who you are. But I thought for folks who don't, it would be great if you could just, you know, give a little bit of background on yourself and Fly Fidelity.
Sure. So for anybody who doesn't know who I am, I'm Luke. Started the Fly Fidelity podcast about, I guess it would have been about 2.5 years ago after setting up a website of the same name. It's really an extension of a podcast I used to do in 2008, which was ran until 2015. One of the challenges of branding Fly Fidelity was that it was completely different from the podcast I used to do in terms of length. It was typical that the old show I used to do would run up until the 6-hour mark and feature as many guests as 5 to 6 every episode. I look back at those years and wonder how we ever pulled it off. I don't think anybody that listens to Fly for the most part knows who we got on, and we were blessed to have, I feel like I'm talking about the old podcast now, but it's relative to talking about this new podcast, of course, and what I'm trying to do with Fly now. But we were blessed to talk to everybody from Runner Jewels to Aesop Rock and Kendrick to RZA and even Nipsey and West Side Gunn. And I think with Fly Fidelity, we've been trying to do, because it is a wee situation, it's produced by Dale Lewis. He's a show producer. We've been trying to do something new, and I hope it's something that carries through in the show that we've been creating for the past 2 years.
And for folks who don't know Fly Fidelity, I urge you to tap in. It's a great podcast. Luke does great interviews. I told him before we started recording that I've often, you know, prepped by listening to his podcast when we are getting ready to host guests, because I find the conversations very inspirational.
Yeah, really, really thoughtfully put together podcast and excellently produced. So shout out to Dale, because it's a very professional sounding show.
Well, I want to give you props for your run last year and wish you both the happiest and best of times this year, because your show is one I've been watching as well from the outside.
Yeah, appreciate
that.
Thank you. That's kind.
Yeah. So, you know, we don't usually have a format when we have these discussions, but, you know, we do like for our guests to feel welcome, and so they get the first round. So Luke, whatever album you want to talk about first is what we'll be talking about first. And just to let folks know, I don't know if I said this already, but each of us picked three albums that we really loved from 2022. We do have a little bit of overlap because some of us picked the same albums, but that's the way the conversation is going to go. And Luke, you're up.
It was hard picking my favorite albums, like Rob said. I don't want to say the best albums because there were so many albums that came out. But for me to pick my favorite albums, because there were so many quality albums, I found it a challenge. And in that list, I think the most striking album for me is World War Studies by Carr. It dropped, of course, back to back with Language Arts, kind of low key with little to no promotion. You never know what to expect when Carr drops a new project, other than knowing it's going to be completely immersive as a listening experience. And I think Woeful Studies for me felt like there was an elevation in terms of growth, some of which, you know, wasn't what you would typically come to expect from a Carr project. Mm-hmm. There's moments where it felt like he was playing a role of student as well as the teacher and doing things perhaps stylistically he hasn't always done traditionally. I would say an example of that is the album opener, We Not Innocent, which features him, of course, flexing double time. Kind of refreshing, kind of surprising hearing him do that, and something he's really had the chance to do. Features a really strong hook as well, next to a few other hooks on this project that I think might be some of his most memorable hooks in recent years. The production, moody, mostly produced by himself, with the exception of a couple of joints by Aunt Animos. So it's completely, for the most part, produced by Carr, and I think he's getting better at making these decisions sonically, and they really shine and lend themselves to this atmosphere he creates when he makes these chambers. As always, you know, the drum plays the background, really minimal. I just feel that he, with this project, in my opinion, next to Language Arts, because they do go hand in hand, of course, conceptually, he's without a shadow of doubt in his prime and his most sharpest lyrically. He's always known how to use his voice and his cadence. There's a real density to this project, and some of the internal lines are incredible. I just think there's something to be said about Carr in his projects and the way he brings you into his universe to bring, you know, to peel back these layers. And this album was no exception, you know. There's always a fresh context that pushes you in to engage with the layers and these political dimensions of social issues. I know that he might be on one of your lists as well, so we're going to get deeper into the tracks. But standout tracks off top, We Not Innocent, I'm Tired, Obstacles, Counted Out, Eat, Reap, The Block. There's so many. And it's a short album, of course. The clock's in at just under 30 minutes, I believe. One feature.
Yeah.
What do you guys think of it?
This was an album I picked for this conversation. So these are one of my top three favorite projects of 2022. And I said this last year. So last year when we had this conversation, we had Cam on from Crate 808. Shout out to Cam. He picked Martyr's Reward. And I said then that it's not always easy listening to Ka. For me, it's not. And these two albums, Language Arts and Woeful Studies, are no exception. There's just deep, raw pain on here. But there's also beautiful moments, especially in the production. And I'm sort of wondering if that's done on purpose. But it's so interesting that you mentioned the time of this project and how I think it's like 27 minutes long or something like that. I know because I was listening to it on Spotify and they kind of clock it at the end of the album. It's so much is packed in that 27 minutes, and it's kind of hard to believe. It's really hard to believe. And he's just somebody that I respect. I respect the path that he's taken. You know, I respect that he is sort of just like, this is my therapy. I do this to talk about my pain and process it, and that's why I'm doing it. It's not for any other reason. I mean, he's still a firefighter to my knowledge, and so I just really appreciate about him. And listening to these projects that he puts out, it's just it's an emotional journey for sure, but it's one that I always enjoy taking, even though it's hard to listen to sometimes. Favorite tracks, I mean, you mentioned a lot of mine. One that really sort of hits hard just because of the sorrow within the track is My Only Home. So he's talking about, you know, where he grew up and just sort of the trauma he experienced in his neighborhood and just wanting to burn everything down. But then he says in the chorus, but this is my only home. It's the only place I've ever known. And that shit is so sad to me. So I was listening to it the other day and I almost cried because I was just like, I think it's the beat too, the beat that was chosen for the song. It really sort of sets the tone on top of the lyricism and gosh, just like the shit that he is processing on that song and the others on this album is just, it's just an incredible thing. I mean, you're really experiencing this. You're really listening to him process pain and trauma in real time.
Yeah. I don't think anybody explores the human condition quite like Carr does.
That track, I mean, there are many sobering moments on this project, but I find that every time My Only Home comes on, it like narrows my focus, even though it's at the very end of the project. I like feel it in my bones as much as I think anyone who's not like a Black American can feel it. And it's interesting though, because I also take like a almost like a hopefulness out of it. Like this is a painful place. A lot of pain has happened to me here, but it's the only home I have, and that I have to work with it somehow. I have to find a way. I haven't spent as much time with this in Language Arts as I would like. I'll admit that, but I maintain that there is a serious meditative quality to Ka's music. And I think that remains true with this project and Language Arts. More and more, I hear him as a poet and almost like an archivist. He like continues to perfect his ability to vocalize not only like his thoughts and feelings and personal pain, but those of his people. It's like cultural activism almost. I said this to someone recently, he's like the Langston Hughes of hip hop or something. And I don't mean that to be any sort of like hyperbolic or unnecessarily grand comparison. I just really feel like he makes some of the most compelling and powerful music of anyone of his generation.
It's interesting you talking about that meditative state he taps into. There's a bar on this project where he says, I'm more shaman than showman, which it kind of took me back to a conversation you guys were having last year with Cam, where Robert said about Ka's verses being more like meditations.
There's something about his voice, like his sort of monotone flow and the production that almost doesn't matter what he's saying, just listening to it. There's a looped quality to all of it that I found really grounding. And you add to that what he's talking about, if you actually listen to the lyrics, and there's a lot to take in, there's a lot to think about.
I was just about to say about the artwork, you look at these two covers, which are very much similar, and you almost feel wrapped up and immersed in the scenes on these covers and these themes like you guys are talking about. Feels like we're occupying the empty chairs in its Ka's world, of course, when you're listening to this.
Yeah, for sure. It's interesting because when these two albums came out, it seemed like the chatter around them, you know, people were gravitating more towards Language Arts versus Woeful Studies. But for me, there was just something about Woeful Studies when I heard it that just, I kept coming back to it. And Language Arts is very good, but there was just something about this project that just really, I think it just has these moments on it that just really deeply impacted me. I'm thinking about songs like The Block, you know, that I co-produced this, correct?
That track?
Yeah.
I believe there's three joints, maybe two joints, right.
Yeah.
Oh, The Block he produced. Yeah.
Yeah. That is one of the most beautiful pieces of production I think I've ever heard. That flute, it just, and again, it's just this beautiful melody. And then what he's talking about is just sort of kind of, it just meets in the middle. And it's just like this happy-go-lucky tune almost. And then this sort of sorrow sort of accompanying the production is, I can't really talk, but I think you know what I'm trying to say. But yeah, just this is a song that I listen to a lot, you know, and just, you know, the tale he's telling about, like, I can't remember exactly all of the lyrics, but, you know, just like a brother on the block that's just like taking care of his, I think it's like somebody in his family and then he gets shot. So it's just like telling the tales of his neighborhood. And it's just, I mean, this song in particular, I think it's just done so well. You know, and it's literally just him talking about his neighborhood and talking about the traumas that he's seen.
That was perfect. I completely agree. And it's an interesting commentary he's making about class warfare throughout the film, isn't it?
Yeah.
That seeps into the Language Arts side of it as well, in some ways.
Nigga. I'ma kill my landlord, so I got a heater. Specifically, a nigga got a 9mm. If he don't believe in God, I'ma make him a believer. He will have no choice, cause he really about to need it. So yo, 6 weeks ago, I'm getting evicted. Begged my landlord to help a nigga. Said he couldn't risk it in the streets. Been out here for weeks, shitting where I sleep. Ain't got shit to eat. Bro, this homeless shit is deep. Rewind, 2 months ago, I lost my job. Was living check to check, but check to check is getting robbed. Home of the free, land of the underpaid. Basically, had a closet off a minimum wage. Now, I don't even have that, but I know where he's at. I'm shooting him, probably his family, and maybe the cat. Last year, shorty, she left the state with my son. This is America, so I spent my last on a gun. Yo, shout out to sex workers. Trans lives matter, house the unhoused, black power. I don't give a fuck who just became a billionaire. I don't give a fuck if they black. You better off telling me who just dropped the deuce or who's in the step sister point. Yeah. I don't give a fuck, nigga.
Okay, I'm going to talk now. King Cobra. Brian Ettles and Infinity Knives, they released a project this year called King Cobra. Our listeners are probably familiar with it. But for those who aren't, Brian Ettles is an MC. Infinity Knives is a producer and a composer, both from the Baltimore area. King Cobra is their second full length. And damn if it doesn't capture all the frustration of the past 3 years. I just think Brian's raps are like so blunt, so direct. It feels like he's just dropping like 80-pound sandbags of anger and resentment and fucking justice bombs throughout the album. All of that happens over this production that, to me, much like another project that I'm going to talk about today, is both a nod to the past while also a sort of new interpretation of that past. And that's not to mention the instrumental pieces that are placed throughout the album that are more contemplative, sort of. To me, they help round out the emotional catharsis that is this album. They provide space for the sort of grief and loss and sadness that no doubt sort of underlies Brian's aggressive lyricism. But I just think for anyone looking for an artist to provide some acknowledgement of the traumatically unjust landscape of the past 3 years, this is it. And I just love it when artists find a way to capture dissonance in their music, or they find a way to make heavy things light. So to me, a track like Melancholy Boogie on this album is just genius. It makes you feel like you want to dance and self-destruct at the same time. And I think in large part, that's sort of the feeling on this album.
It's interesting because they definitely, like, everything, you capture this perfectly. Obviously, like, listening to this, you know, you resonate with those frustrations and that anger. But they also, when I listened to this, Brian also gave me different perspectives. So one line in particular sticks out, and it's not the line. I don't know the line, like, you know, verbatim, but he sort of talks about the insurrection, and he says to the group of people that did it, right idea, wrong motive.
Yeah.
And I remember listening to that, and it made me stop, and I was like, huh. Mm. You know, I never really, you know, I just thought those people were fucking idiots, so I didn't really think too deeply about that. But when he said it, I was like, oh yeah, okay. And then I was sort of drawn into other, you know, other ideas, like around like how Fred Hampton would say that to, you know, poor white folks whenever he was in the Black Panther Party, and he was trying to get unity with them and sort of work together. And I was just like, yeah, Brian definitely channeled that. But it was just interesting for me listening to the project, because there was also like a different perspective there given versus, you know, in addition to like talking about things that were a lot of us, not all of us, a lot of us are really angry about and frustrated about, but also providing new perspectives.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, for me, admittedly, this was a first time listen. I'd seen the name Infinity Knives, of course, but it wasn't until recently I could put a sound to his face. And it's through your choice and you championing this album recently that I've been able to hear this. And where have I been sleeping? What rock have I been sleeping under? It's incredible. Completely singular. Like you said, there's this marriage between the production and lyrics that just really works and harkens back to, I mean, Enel says it himself at one point, it might be on Coke Jaw, where he says we're the post-apocalyptic Run DMC.
Yeah.
And it kind of made sense in terms of their chemistry. You can see this lineage that goes back to the 80s with the likes of even Public Enemy, with, you know, the way Infinity Knives kind of subverts a lot of these sounds. And there's almost this Bomb Squad influencing-esque style on here. I don't want to be lazy and use comparisons, but you can see it's rooted in that. And the anger, of course, which you mentioned, it's again going back to PE. It's something Chuck D about him opening Coke Jaw with the line "Fuck the Clintons and the Kennedys."
Yeah.
You know, and then listening to a track like "Bluffing," is that a tribute to Ice-T's Colors?
Man, that's a great question. I don't know.
It felt like it was.
It could. It felt like it very well could be. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's a great storyteller.
For sure.
And it goes back to this trauma we were talking about with Carr that he's able to just execute so well.
Yeah.
Loved it. So thanks for putting me up on it.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm blanking on the name of the song, but there's a track on here that's, you know, he's telling a story about killing his landlord and teaming up with somebody else from the building to do it. And if there's one song on this album that I feel like captures the anger, it's that one. It's in between verses. He's just ranting and raving about random shit. Like, fuck people who pose next to cars. Like, that has nothing to do with the song, but he's so angry. It's just all bubbling over. It's such a cathartic release. Just a great, great record.
And it's such a singular record as well, right, guys? Yeah. Nothing else sounded like it last
Absolutely.
Year.
Absolutely, yeah.
No. I can't think of anything that was like this. It's like a time capsule too. Like in 10 or 20 years from now, you know, if you really wanted to know what was going on and how people were feeling, like, go back and listen to this album.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. Yeah. And it's just adding on, it's really interesting how so many of these songs are straight up instrumentals that almost allow for you to not overdose this, you know, high density. You know, it's very explosive at times, isn't it? The sonics we hear, and sometimes you just get instrumentals which you can listen to without the vocals, and it kind of channels that pace of the album, if that makes any sense whatsoever.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely
yeah,
does.
I remember when we spoke to them, we started framing those instrumentals as a way to like ensure that the listener does not get overwhelmed.
Oh, really?
I don't know if that was their intention, but that I remember like discussing that with them as an experience that I had, like having those moments where it's more calm. Kind of keeps me from feeling overwhelmed by all the, you know, like seething anger on the record.
It's an amazing album. I mean, is it available to buy on wax?
It is.
Yeah,
it is.
Definitely got to pick it up.
In fact, I think it ships from the UK, so you might get a better deal on shipping there.
Nice.
Yeah,
that album cover as well. There's so much in that.
It's a great shot. Yeah.
It's simple, but it really works. Kind of encapsulates everything on it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Am I up?
I feel like we need like a like ding. Like it's time to
Yeah. Okay. So I recently bought The Gigolo by Lee Morgan. Amazing album. And I don't know if it's the first pressing or not, but on the version that I have in the liner notes, they were written by Nat Hinoff. I hope I'm saying his name correctly, but he talks about his relationship with Lee Morgan's music, you know, how he discovered him, you know, what his music, you know, has done for him. And there's this one line that really stood out to me. He says, "My favorite musicians are the ones that make me feel, especially those who can make me feel vulnerable, sanguine, as well as mortal." That's the perfect way to describe my relationship with the Lucid. And Lucid's work, especially if you're talking about I Told Bessie. I mean, talk about fucking emotions. I wish that somebody had been walking alongside me with a camera recording my reactions to each track when I was listening to this album. I'll never forget. It came out on a Friday. I can't remember the date it dropped, but I was checking for it because I knew it was going to be amazing. But, you know, I was completely fucking blown away. And so I'm listening to these tracks and I know that I'm having a physical reaction to them, you know, so like songs like Old Magic, you know, almost tearing up and then also getting angry. and then Betamax, like hearing this for the first time and hearing for the first time, I believe in Black people believe in, like smiling and again, tearing up. It is an album, at the risk of sounding dramatic and maybe corny, it is an album that changed my life. It really sort of reminded me why I love music so much. And it just really provided this space for me, a space that I really needed, a space to be, a space that I felt affirmed in. And I've talked to other Black people and they said similar things to me, especially I've had a conversation with a lot of Black people around Betamax and the reaction to it and how each time they hear it, the reaction is the same. Like literally an artist that I know, Black artist that I know posted, "I believe in Black people believe in." And I said to him the other day, I was just like, every time I hear a Lucid say that, I get emotional. And he said, same. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just the, you know, this was an album that, of course, the production was great. Of course, the lyricism was great because the Lucid is on point. But it was just an album that had profound and deep impact on me. But beyond that, right, it's very spiritual. So there are times when I've tried to describe how I feel about it that I can't, because some stuff is just indescribable. It's just a feeling that I get when I listen to it. And, you know, I could go on for hours about this album. And honestly, I've told anybody who has listened to me this year how much I loved it. But people are probably fucking tired of me talking about it. And I'm sorry, but it's just one of those albums for me. It means a great deal to me. And it meant a great deal for me to have a Lucid on the show and talk to him about it and express those sentiments to him. Like that was really impactful for me. So shout out to him. And oh, such an amazing album. I mean, the production on Smile Lines, shout out to August Fanon, you know, Sardonyx, the Posse track, like, come on. Like, it's just fucking perfection. I mean, and of course, Billy Woods shines on this. And I love Lucid and Billy Woods together. They are just fucking magic. Magic. They're so good by themselves, but they're so, to me, they're even better when they're together. Mm-hmm. And you really feel that on this album. Okay, I'll stop and listen to you.
You mentioned Smile Lines. It's like you said, the beat's incredible, but not only that, it's been my ringtone for the past 5 months. It's been my ringtone for the past 5 months. And yeah, there is a power in this album, like you're saying. And it's just, for me, it kind of harkens back to the same ethos of Open Mic's Component System, in that it's very much an album that finds himself falling in love with hip hop again. Beats, bars, the way he, you know, goes in. The highest of quality from the production to the delivery. It might be my favorite Lucid album so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard to think of what to say about it that we haven't already said either here or in other places on the podcast, but you know, I'm happy to echo everything that's been said. It's just a spiritual journey, you know. I think when I came to the conclusion, after spending a lot of time with it, prepping for him, his appearance on the podcast, coming to the conclusion that what he's done with this project is, like you're saying, he created this sort of sacred space protected by like spells and magic for listeners to like confront things, whether it's their loss or their trauma or their time theft, as Joy James calls it. It came to life for me in a new way, thinking about it from that perspective. And I love it as well. I just think it's great. Spelling, to me, is just a brilliant opening track. The Joy James clip at the beginning and Child Actor's beat on that. And Lucid's just a natural way of coming up with these like chants that get stuck in your mind. I know those weren't necessarily his words, but the way he says, "Just got to heaven and I can't sit down," like it just gets in there. It just gets in your mind. And
he made those words his, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah. He made them new, right? In a new way. Mm. It would have been on my list, E, if it hadn't already been on yours.
What about Sardonyx? Sardonyx is an incredible track.
That posse cut. Yeah. I mean, and it's like the best of the best, you know. Sufa opens it up and he really just does this thing. I love Sifu. Also Quelle Chris, you know, Woods, of course. But yeah, it's so good. Yeah. And I feel like we don't always, you know, we don't always get posse cuts anymore. It was nice to hear this.
Speaking of hearing it, it's always interesting knowing how hands-on Lucid is with the production and the arrangement of the songs he puts out. And I feel like this album was no exception. It's got his fingerprints all over it. Absolutely. And there's, of course, four brand new essentially armored hammer tracks if you think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, and they're, I mean, I'm thinking about Jumanji, like that beat.
Crazy.
But also they're back and forth. It's just so fucking good. Mm-hmm. It's so good every single time. I really do think that they're just so much better together. Like they just really balance each other out, and they just have this really unique relationship when they're rhyming together. I love it. I felt very fortunate to be able to tell him a lot of what I'm saying to you two right now when he was on the show last year. But yeah, I just think he just has this spiritual essence. I mean, this album was dedicated to his grandmother, so a lot of, you know, a lot of that spirituality is certainly in this. But, you know, I'll just sum it up by saying there's a lot of times when Elucid is rhyming through a given project that I feel he's a vessel being used by ancestors, and I can feel the past through him, and that shit is really powerful.
I used to stand on phone book, the turnover off the no look, shook up cold as a ghost foot. I used to cry when I wrote hooks, where's the dry in my notebook? Everything's high octane, I like to hide in the quatrain, sell it for high on the blockchain, but no keys fit the keyhole, pick up the team like a veto, tall, we big as a beanpole, I seen the checklist, we done several, he made a spoon out of gunmetal, I picked the daisy to one petal, and do they love me, you love me not, I got the ends, I'm unsettled, I made a wish on the dishwater, I want a nap and a big offer, I love rap, it's a bit awkward, I got whooped with a pro. Kid. I did a stroll called the broke leg. Shout out to werewolves, the dope head. Yeah.
Burn whatever it was.
What it was.
Dream was hung from a tree.
From a tree.
See the monster in me.
See the monster.
See the monster in me.
See the monster.
It's cold American wind.
It's cold.
Dream American dream.
Dream of dreams.
See the monster in me.
See the monster.
See the monster.
Well, speaking of the past, my next pick is Open Mic Ego's component system with the auto reverse, and that's the quickest way, of course, to say the album title because it did have an original title, which you're not going to say. It's really long. I feel like we would need an extra hour to be able to say it. But, Open Mic Ego's, like I say, system with the auto reverse, and after Anime Trauma Divorce, I wasn't sure where he was going to go conceptually. And with this album, I wasn't let down. He's kind of going through a creative renaissance right now, and I think knowing where he's been over the past years kind of gives a context to this album. And there's a real spirit of innocence that takes you back to your earliest memories of being a fan and experiencing hip-hop for this first time with this album. And I don't think he's always got the credit he deserves for being one of the best beat selectors. The decisions he makes sequentially as a way to replicate the feeling of a tape really created a feeling and space of comfort with this album. There's very much a stream of conscious approach to this project that pushes the narrative forward, and I just think it's some of his best work to date. He's always had a knack for sharing heartfelt stories, you know, with this conviction, and it's a really cohesive body of work featuring some of his best songs to date.
It's interesting because as I was listening to prepare for this today, I started thinking about this album as kind of a companion to King Cobra. This is quite a natural time for people to be making music that is reflective. And I think where King Cobra sort of gives voice to our frustration over the past 3 years, like this album might give voice or sort of represent a sort of questioning that seems natural to have been happening recently. Like, how did I get here? Like, he's asking a lot of, or reflecting a lot on career, right, in this project. Mm. Like, what are the things I want to remember about my life? And what are the things I'd like to forget, maybe? And for that reason, I think the track I Retired, Then I Changed My Mind feels kind of like a thesis statement on this album, where he's like being real vulnerable about how he thinks about his music, his art, his career. I really like that track. Yeah, and if I didn't know already that he was someone who's benefited from therapy, this album would make it plain to me that he has, just the way that he's articulating some of his questioning and his reflection. It's like he's found a way to like take rumination and turn it into art. And I think that's really powerful. So I think it's a really personal album, but it clearly touches on some very human themes. Like, mainly, we spend a lot of time alone with our thoughts, and we naturally end up thinking a lot about yesterday, like he says in TDK scribbled intro.
I don't know if this is the right way to describe this or if this is going to make sense to anybody else besides me, but when I listen to this album, he just feels so accessible. And I don't know if it's because of the openness that he's sort of, you know, providing, you know, being vulnerable, you know, and also talking about things that, you know, we can all relate to. But it just feels like almost like I'm listening to my friend talk about stuff, not this rapper who's famous, who I don't have a relationship with. I don't know. It just really felt, I don't know what the word is.
Conversational.
Yeah, very much so. And I didn't really spend a lot of time with this album after, you know, like when it initially came out. When I was listening to it over last week, I was like, man, this is really good. I really like this album. And I think when it came out initially, I'd maybe listened to a track or two and I just like didn't really sit with it for a while. But it is really good. I will say, so Rob and I, at the end of last year, interviewed Fatboy Sharif in person in Philly. He did a show with Mike. And so we're watching this show and Open Mike Eagle is performing and he just looks like he's so free. Like I got a couple of pictures of him and he's performing songs from this album. And there are moments when he's just kind of like dancing and his hands are in the air and he just feels so, again, it just felt he feels accessible. Like we got to talk to him after the show. And I don't know, I feel like sometimes when you're listening to somebody's art, there's a wall there, even if they're talking about stuff that you can relate to. And I don't feel that way when I listen to him, I definitely didn't feel that way when I saw him perform in person. So
yeah, no, I completely agree. There is a freedom listening to this album. And of course, one of the reasons he made this project was to be able to flex lyrically and not be able to talk about the topics he had before in the past, coming out with a divorce and some of the things he talked about before. There is an elevation, again, much like Kaz's project, where he's stepped it up lyrically. And I think this is Open Mic at his pinnacle, at his very best. And when you think about the circumstances he made his last album up against and the space he was leaving going into this, it does feel like a natural progression. You know, knowing the weight, making that last project and going into this. I think it takes a very skilled artist to be able to use nostalgia the way he does on this and subvert it in such a way conceptually where it doesn't sound safe and predictable. It doesn't sound safe. And it does feel like a warm blanket. It does feel conversational. It does feel like having a cup of tea listening to this album. And for that reason, I think there's an accessible distance and relationship with this music we're hearing. And it's got great features. Some of my favorite tracks are with the features. Of course, there's the track with Aesop Rock, the infamous, what's the name of the track? I'm forgetting off top.
CD bonus track.
Right. Which caused a lot of controversy. I don't know if controversy is the right word to use, but can you guys remember what happened with that?
I don't.
With CD bonus tracks?
Yeah, it wasn't controversy, but he posted it on Twitter, of course. Oh. And initially, everybody thought it was the CD bonus track.
Oh boy.
I was just gonna say it's full of revelations about things he's done in the past, much like that title track. The title of that track where he's talking about his first album and that potentially being too bold.
Yeah.
Too smart for people.
Yeah.
So I think maybe subconsciously there were decisions he made in an attempt to appear more accessible to people. But he hasn't compromised at all.
Yeah.
I
mean, you were talking about Arm & Hammer. How about Burner Account on this album?
Incredible.
Great song. Yeah, it's funny, Luke, that you mentioned how he's like stepped it up lyrically. When there are a couple points on the album where he kind of makes fun of his pen game. He like is being critical of himself. And I think that just speaks to something that we haven't mentioned, but is true, I think, of everything I've heard from him. It's his sense of humor, which I think makes him more relatable. He's always been comfortable, it seems like, making fun of himself in some way. And he has a way of talking about serious things with a lightness that I've always enjoyed.
is almost like a shrugging of his shoulders when he's saying these bars sometimes.
A good way to put it.
It's like a shrug almost. I mean, you got you got beats rather with Diamond D. You got 3 beats, I believe, on this project.
Yeah.
With Diamond D. One of the songs is produced by Madlib, which for me I was waiting for a long time. I think Quale Chris gives one of the best beats of 2022 with 79th and Stony Island. You got Rap Ferreira, Still Rift, and Video Dave. The chemistry is just thriving on this project, in my opinion. What about you, E? Do you have any favorite songs on this project?
I love I'll Fight You. For the title, but also just I love the production. And obviously, Burner Account, 79th, and Stony Island. Yeah, those are definitely a few of my favorites.
All right, whose turn? Is it you, E? Or is it me?
No, it's you. Oh. It's you.
All right. I want to talk about Mighty Cannons. So again, I think our listeners are probably familiar, but Ace Cannons is an MC from Maryland, I believe from the Baltimore area. Mighty Healthy is a producer based in Miami. Together, they've joined forces to melt your fucking face off with this album, Mighty Cannons. It's funny, like I thought a lot about what to say about this record other than, and I struggled. Because all I can really come up with is just like, it just slaps for 30 minutes straight. It's just relentless, like pure energy. It's one of the most fun things that I listened to this year. In hip hop, we like to refer to MCs as spitting. And I just feel like very few people have embodied that this year as much as Ace Cannons did on this project. And the production from Mighty Healthy is kind of like what I was saying with King Cobra and Infinity Knives, both a nod to like rap legends like Bomb Squad-esque in its fury, but it's also somehow refreshing in ways, you know, that E and I have talked about and the fellas have said themselves on the show. They just want to make what they like, and what they like is apparently just big ass drums and high BPMs. And I love that it's only 30 minutes long, because if it was any longer, like, I feel like it might make my head explode, like a overdose of Red Bull or some shit. Like, it, but it's also, like, at the same time, like, easy to put it on and let it play on repeat until you realize, like, you've probably done some permanent damage to your hearing. But with all the, like, deeply challenging projects that came out this past year, like meaningful, emotional, like we're talking about some of them, Ka, Lucid. This was just something that I needed personally to help me just kick out some energy. I mean, tracks like Gotham and Molotov, like, come on. There's just, they're bangers.
So good. So good. Yeah. Molotov 2 is incredible.
Yeah.
I think this really shined a light on the MC's technique, right? So, you know, there's lyricism, there's wordplay, there's clever rhymes, and then there's execution. And Ace Cannon just fucking kills it. You know, it sort of really took me back to a time like in the early 90s when that was not that it's not important now, but that was really, really important. You know, the way that you're rhyming, your flow, and the speed at which you're rhyming. And it just was listening to him, I was like, holy fucking shit. You know, so it just, it really took me back to an earlier time in hip hop. And yeah, I think the energy. Yeah. So I remember Rob was like, you got to listen to this. Like, it's fucking crazy. And I didn't for a little bit. And it always takes me a while to like catch up. And then I did. And I was like, holy shit. What is this? Who are these people? Like, it's just fucking incredible. And yeah, it's definitely an album you can put on repeat. Just let that shit rock. And it's fucking good. Like, I don't know what else to say, but to say that, like, it just is, it's energy from start to finish. And yeah, like, I think myself, I'll speak for myself. I needed shit like that too. Just like, because life is fucking stressful, you know, and, you know, listening to heavier projects, I tend to gravitate towards that stuff. And then so to hear this, it's just like, it can be a breath of fresh air sometimes, just because it really sort of brings you back to life. You know, and re sort of amps your energy.
It's definitely an energizing project, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
it's interesting listening to this album sequentially. It kind of, not only is it tight, you know, it's a short, I think it might be the shortest album of all of our picks, but it kind of comes together almost in, I don't know if the way I'm going to describe this is going to make sense, but it kind of comes together almost in a comic book-esque pace. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Everything landing is kind of maximized by the consistency of the next track.
Mm. Yeah.
The sample choices and a dialogue kind of extend the feeling that you're in their world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know if that makes any sense, but I just felt like the consistency on this thing, it was just overworldly for me, the universe he created. And it kind of took me back. I know there's the Wu-Tang reference with the Mighty Healthy name, but it did in parts, not to be lazy, it did kind of take me back to that Wu-Tang kind of sound.
I think in some parts that was intentional on this record, like the track
Hive. Oh, really?
That track Hive, I think, was their attempt to like to sort of channel Wu-Tang, the Wu-Tang Killer Bees, you know. I kind of remember them saying that too when we talked to them, E.
Yeah, definitely.
Gotham, again, going back to that comic reference, maybe that was their intentions, you know, having a track called Gotham on here. I don't know, that's just how it felt to me, the whole momentum and the pace of this thing, it was completely overworldly. Didn't sound like anything else last year, and like E said, it was very much needed. The Rise is a crazy track, Katonic. Is it FKS? Is that the track?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's too short. I mean, if I were to criticize this album, I want more.
Yeah. I think it's coming. I think they got a part two in the works.
Go. Solo. Yeah. Solo to the hoes, hold the cold calls. Junkyard blows, no grow, no show. Hold your hold, the roof caved in over you. Boo-hoo, charging to the game, voodoo. Killing in the name of a set side crew. Set aside two with a spike value. Pipe down, boo, maybe I'ma choose you. The whole crew knew that the fool was too loose. Triple time, ooh, guess the L was on you. Circle never grew, bet the boy be the truth. Raw by divine sight, dimensions of the mind. Slow it down, wine, I was poking in your spine. Never really fine, living in this wartime. War chest, bezel from the sample cell special. I question if these ragers really into heavy metal. A beeper and a pager with a neoprene fader. Seen him in a fader, now the nigga think he major. String him up high, guess we'll never see him later. Soul took flight from a mismatched crater.
Man Plays the Horn by Cities of Eve. Lots to say about this album too. I was introduced to Cities of Eve through this album, so I had no idea who he was, hadn't listened to any of his previous projects, and I can't even remember at this point how I found Man Plays the Horn. I have no idea. I don't know if it was Instagram or whatever. It might have been Bandcamp, just sort of looking around for stuff. But as soon as I heard it, I was like, oh my God, I was just like sort of taken to this other world. And I remember I was sort of a little bit of a backstory. When I heard it for the first time, I was dog sitting my mom's dog, and my mom lives in the middle of nowhere, like in the fucking country, in central Pennsylvania, which is not always the greatest fucking place. Luke, you're not really familiar with central Pennsylvania, but Rob can tell you that it's not really always a great place. Anyways, so I'm sitting, I'm on my mom's porch. I'm just sort of looking out. My stepdad has like acres of land. So I'm just looking out and I'm listening to this fucking album. And I don't think I could have picked a better scene, a better place to take this all in, because this album is a fucking experience. It's extremely long. You know, but it's, I mean, I think it's supposed to be, and I don't think it could be a short album based upon what Cities of Eve is trying to say through this project. Similar to I Told Bessie, it's an album, particularly for me as a Black person, that really spoke to me. It just sounds Black to me, and the lyricism, but also the production. Some of these tracks, like I'm thinking about Ways of the World, sounds like a 90s R&B cut, you know, and just some of the commentary on here, but the sounds he uses. Yeah, it's just one of those albums. I really felt a sense of community listening to it. And I think that that's what makes it so unique and special for me. You know, it's sort of like, I will sort of say, it's almost like, it's the best way that I can describe it. It's almost like, and Black people will know what I'm talking about. When Black people see each other on the street and they just sort of look at each other and give a nod, and there's so much being spoken in that interaction. There's so many things being spoken in our interaction, even if there's nothing being said. And that's how I feel when I listen to Man Plays the Horn. I also want to say, I don't think prior to this album that I really, really, truly enjoyed like super long instrumentals. And I really got into that through this album, like Smoking on a Brighter Day. Like, that is a whole experience. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a track that I was like, oh, okay, next. I love listening to it. I'm looking at my notes. It's 12 minutes and 27 seconds long. I want every second of it. I want every minute of it. You know, it's a beautiful track, and it's instrumental. There's no rhyming on it whatsoever. And there's also like not a lot of features on here. There's Luca and Griff Specs, and I think that might be it. You know, a lot of it is instrumental, or it's Cities of Eve rapping. It's just beautiful. It was a beautiful project that I happened to come across, and I'm so glad I did, because he's definitely an artist that has become a favorite of mine after I discovered this album. And he put out another album at the end of last year, and has a long title, and I can't remember the name of it, but it's beautiful too. He does a lot of great work.
It's called Working Title for the album Secret Waters.
There you go. I knew it was long.
Can't believe you didn't remember that.
Yeah. So sorry, Cities of Eve. I'm so sorry. But that project is beautiful too. And I think the difference between the two is, to me at least, it seems like he's rhyming on that album more than he's rhyming on this one.
Interesting.
Yeah,
for me, this is another, you know, we've been talking about singular sounding albums. For me, this is another really unique sounding record. I mean, for a hip hop album, I don't know if there's anything else out there that sounds like this. You and I were on the Rap Music Plug podcast talking to Rohan about this album, and we might have touched on it then, but you were describing the length and how it sort of needs to be as long as it is to kind of get across what he seems to want to get across. And I think part of that has to do with like the way he captures sort of a whole history of Black music on this project. Mm. Sounds that move across genres that feel to me to be a tribute to Black music. The beginning of the album, I think, speaks to that in some way. I don't know who it is that's sampled at the beginning, just talking about playing the horn, you know, and hip hop's role in sort of replacing that or coming alongside of it. Mm. And like you're saying about the instrumental pieces, like I love them. I love that 12-minute track. It's another, again, to use a word that I use to describe Ka, it's really meditative for me. They're just beautiful moments on this record. Subterranean Staircase remains like one of my favorite tracks of 2022. Just a beautiful song. I love it.
Incredible. Incredible. You never do feel that this album outstays its welcome. Mm. You say, you know, this album is, I think it's an hour and 22 minutes,
yeah,
if I remember right. Yeah.
Mm, yeah.
26 tracks deep, and none of them feel like filler. You know, it's that I don't think anybody has had the vision he's had last year to make this album. I genuinely think it's one of the most creative albums I've heard in a while, and the way he blends melodies and experimentation together. Mm. Again, like Rob said, very singular.
Mm-hmm.
Favorite joints. I keep going back to tracks, but right now off top, Everything Working on a Natural Time.
Mm.
The Sun, the Moon, the Spa, Tragedy Theater, rather. Ways of the World, Subterranean Staircase, Black Pleasure, Smoking on a Brighter Day, Bolt Thrower. There's too many. I mean, we would be
too
here.
Many. Yeah,
there's too many. But it's interesting you going back to having this view and being able to soak up this album with this view. It does transcend a specific vibe and feeling listening to this, for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very retro and throwback, much like the music Larry June makes as well, using the older sounds.
Yeah.
You know, sonically. That was who produced this, by the way?
I think he produced most of it.
Wow.
There might have been something he did not. I don't recall.
Of the 26 tracks, there were only four that he did not produce.
Yeah, it's a really interesting project.
I love the cover art too. Really simple.
Very good.
Communicates a lot.
It looks like an old like computer graphic, like from the 90s or something like that. Yeah.
As if he's topping into that time. Right. Right.
Yeah.
I think Mengistu Haile Mariam is my neighbor. Whoever it is moved in and put an automated gate up. Repainted brick walls atop which now cameras rotated. By 8 the place dark, one light burned later. Razor wire like a slinky. Rumor is Parson Bomb took the secretary right eye and pinky. Evenings he take a snifter of whiskey on the veranda. I wonder what he's thinking. In the morning the maid brings coffee from the kitchen. Some nice strange music plays. I lay in bed and listen. Downstairs I hear my mother breaking dishes. My father tripping. It's been quite bad lately. High tension, galvanized steel, security fencing. To get through the day, give myself a mission. Anything will get me out the house a blessing. His bodyguard chews cat, spits black in the rhododendron. Blackout rains rumble when he start the engine. Avocado tree hang over the property line. I watch from as high as I can climb. The dog looks up and whines. The hills are alive with landmines. I live in my mind. Not sure what I'm looking for, but I'll know when I find. My mother sent the gardener to look for me, but the sky is a great place to hide. Never told the truth in your life. Can't start now. Ever so slowly, slowly locked up in your own house.
My next pick is going to be Billy Woods' Ethiopes, which might be my favorite Woods album yet. From the opening bar on Asylum, you're kind of taken in to Woods' world, and there's a density on this album that I'm still picking apart, you know, 40 plus listens into it. Conceptually, I think there's a real director's perspective and attention to detail around these themes and ideas he's tackling. I just think he's completely stretched his winds and writing with this, and to the point it kind of feels like they're brush strokes more so than bars this time. It's just when you look at that album cover, and obviously it's based on that classic art piece, I just feel like it's a reflection of that, and it encapsulates that feeling you get looking at that picture. Preservation did an incredible job with the production, adds layers to him rhyming about what he's rhyming about, and the choices he makes with samples is second to none. He really curated a framework for Woods to tap into, I guess, a different level of reinvention for me. I've never heard a Woods album like this before.
This was on my list as well, so I guess this will be our last one, right? Are we done after this?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. That went fast.
It did go fast.
But yeah, this was one of my picks as well. For starters, I mean, you mentioned Preservation. I don't think there's a better produced album from last year than this record. There were a lot of excellently produced albums. But what Preservation did here to me is just incredibly detailed. And like you said, a perfect bed for Woods' narratives. If you put on some good headphones and listen to Savage and the Doldrums, for example, and just pay attention to all the little notes and sounds like sprinkled throughout those beats, Preservation just really mastered the use of space on this record, on this album. And I could probably go on about that, but that's just the production. Like, we could talk about the sequencing, which I feel like I talk about every time I listen to a Billy Woods album or an Arm & Hammer album. I just appreciate it so much. It's a small detail, but when it's done right, it just allows you to like move through an album like seamlessly. And it makes the listening experience just so much more rich. And that's definitely true for this album. And I think on this album, like, makes the world that he's building like come to life a bit more. Then of course there's Woods, you know, and I don't think you could say enough about on this album how he's like somehow managed to weave together personal experiences, present day political, social commentary, and historical context, like all together in a single narrative, frequently on the same song, like Asylum, like right from the top. Like, who else spins a tale like that? Just
incredible.
Layers and layers of depth, just brilliant writing. Woods is also one of those people, like, if you've seen him live, like, at least for me, it's impossible to separate his performance now from like what you hear on record. I think of him as a professor. Like, he's teaching a class. What did he say when we saw him at Johnny Brenda's? oh, it's story time. They said, turn the lights down, it's story time. That's just so true of the, that's the experience you have in listening to his, like, I feel like he's trying to teach me something and I need to pay attention. And then the last thing I'll say is just the features, like, incredible. LP and Breeze Brewing, come on. Despot, Boldy James, and Gabe Nandez, like the people he brought together for this project is just incredible.
Yeah, the storytelling on here is phenomenal. This is an album I didn't spend a lot of time with in comparison to other people, because I know this was like the talk of 2022, just, you know, listening to people, seeing what people were excited about. I think because I was really trying to sit with the songs that resonated with me, and Asylum was one of them. I remember when this first came out, I listened to Asylum like probably 5 times in a row, because I was really trying to listen to the story that he was telling. And there's so much detail in it. It's so vivid. Mm-hmm. You know, even on No Hard Feelings, when he's describing himself in this hotel room after this person ghosted him, and he's describing the champagne sitting in this thing as ice is melting, he's every little detail is being described, and it's incredible. That is not easy to do.
But he's doing it without, like, with very few words. Like, that's one of his gifts. It's like, like you're saying about brushstrokes, Luke. He's like, he paints a picture with very little effort, like very few words, but somehow it still comes to life in your mind.
Mm. It's the details. He's telling the story, and maybe there's not a lot of them, but he's really like, it's like you're there with him. Like, you're there in that hotel room with him, looking at this text that this person said, no hard feelings. Like, he paints a picture. He really does. Mm. And I think that is one of his gifts. Like, it's incredible. And seeing him live was an experience. I will say that I'd never seen him live before last year. And when I did, I was like, okay, I get it. And I actually saw him twice. Last year he performed in Brooklyn, and I caught that, and it was fucking dope because he did No Hard Feelings, and he did it with a live band. And it was incredible. I mean, like, the flute was playing, there was a sax, it was fucking great. And I was like, this is really something special.
That was with,
incredible.
That was Algiers, is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
I could have seen thoughts about his live show. I saw him last year in LA, and best live show in my opinion I saw last year. And he brought out this almost who's who of artists to see him perform, and of course he held it down like a craftsman he is.
Yeah.
And you talking about going back to the detail, this director's perspective and almost Hitchcockian lens we're talking about. You mentioned the situation with the space in the words and how he uses his words. You talked about Preservation's production and how it's got this space, and some of these elements almost come across as if they're floating in the arrangements. It's just really interesting how Woods is able to complement that and bring you, like you said, E, into his world, almost in a conversationalist kind of approach, where it is a similar setup and situation with, you know, Open Mic Eagle. You know, you feel like you sat with him, you're in there with him, and it's just some of the best storytelling and lyricism from all of last year, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Standout tracks, of course, you mentioned it, No Hard Feelings, Smith and Cross, Savage. Mm-hmm. Baldy, by the way, Baldy absolutely smashed his verse on Savage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
As well as Gabe Nandez. I wasn't aware of Gabe prior to hearing that. What about you guys?
Familiar with Gabe. I'm not versed, but yeah, he's good. He's good.
You may have found it already, but I can't remember the name. I'm terrible with track titles, but I think it was not last year, but the year before, he put out an EP, had a track on there with Elucid, produced by Roper Williams. Mm-hmm. Really dope song. I'll try to find the name of it.
That's dope. Speaking of Roper Williams, there is a track on here with Fatboy Sharif, Harlem.
Right. Oh.
Really, really interesting arrangement on that, right?
Oh my God, so good. Oh, it's so good because it's like... like there's a beat switch, and when Fatboy Sharif comes in, it's that piano. It's just somebody. It's like, it's almost chaotic. Like somebody's playing this piano, and the way that Sharif comes in, it's just perfect. It's perfect. It's like this space was created for Fatboy Sharif to join Woods on this track.
Completely agree. One of my favorite lines on this album is on Heavy Water, where he refers to himself as the multiverse Benzino.
Yeah, that's a standout reference. Yeah, for sure.
It's got to be the funniest bar last year.
Heavy Water is absolutely one of my favorites on this album. Just the fact, like I said, that he brought LP and Breeze Brewing back together on Wax. I just love that so much. But there's so many. It's so hard to pick favorites.
In a way, the album ends with Smith and Cross. Is just, I haven't heard a rap album end so perfectly in a long time. The way conceptually he sets it up to end that way. Incredible.
Yeah, brilliant.
Here and Mike Ladd featured on Christine as well. That's another interesting moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The storytelling on Christine too is
incredible.
Yeah. Have either of you seen the video for Pollo Rico song on Church?
I think I did recently. Can't remember.
In the beginning of the video, Lucid and Woods are standing at the ocean. Their back is turned to the camera. They're just standing there.
Yeah. Right.
And then they get in this boat and they're in this water. And I feel like that is so symbolic of what Woods does, but also Lucid telling this tale of, and I think you said it, Rob, modern day, particularly we're concerned Black folks, but also intertwining the history of the community.
Yeah.
Like that imagery in that video represents what they're trying to do to me. You know, I really feel like you see that on Atheos, but also Church. I feel Church is like a more modern day representation of the Black community, specifically from Woods's perspective and his experience. But yeah, I think that's what they're both of them do in their artistry.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It's an amazing video, by the way.
It's so emotional.
Yeah, you mentioned Church. I mean, we're not going to get to talk about Church, but it's really unfair that an artist gets to release two albums like that in the same year. All right. Did we do it?
I think we did it. I think that wraps up our faves from 2022. It's like record timing.
That was easy.
Was there anything you guys overlooked or missed last year?
I'm sure there's something I missed. But there were, you know, you said this at the top, Luke, it was really hard to narrow down these choices to just three albums. I came really close to picking Death Fame from Quelle Chris. I really love that album. But I had to be honest with myself and just say, like, I definitely listened more to King Cobra and Mighty Cannons. So went with those two. But that's one that stands out to me, Death Fame.
Yeah, same. I mean, there was a lot of good projects released last year, a lot. So to pick just three was really challenging. You know, Preaching in Havana was almost on my list. I think if I would have got to spend more time with it, Little Sims' new album, is it No Thank You?
Yeah. So good. Such a great record.
It's very fucking good. And her and Cleo Soul are just, ugh. But yeah, projects like that, it was just really hard to keep up. And there was just so many great, there's so many great moments in hip hop. Also, Spirit Roaming, Kai Solo. Mm-hmm. There's just a lot of things that I just, unfortunately, just didn't get a lot of time with. So I'll probably be listening to a lot of that this year. And that's why I'm always behind.
There's so much coming out. What would be your most anticipated albums this year?
I'm definitely checking for Nappy Nina. She's releasing a new album. I feel like I don't know what to expect from people. I mean, I know what I would want, but I don't know if they're actually going to do it this year. Do you know what I'm saying? So like, obviously anything that Lucid would release, but I don't know if he's going to release another album this year. I have no idea, you know, so it's kind of hard to tell what people are going to do. But I mean, anything from certainly any of the people that I mentioned today and my favorite projects, I would be checking for.
Nice. There is a new Lucid, by the way, dropping this year. I think there's another two projects, and there's a few projects, of course, coming from Backwoods, which Witty Green mentions on a new episode. Shameless promotion.
We'll allow it.
God bless. Well, that's the album I'll be checking for then.
Likewise. Super looking forward to it.
There's a couple things that have already been announced that I'm looking forward to. This new Black Thought project with L. Michael's Affair. I think that's how you say
True.
It. Sounds interesting to me. I'm very curious about that. The new Danny Brown that's being teased. I'm very curious about that also. And Def C, just he's getting ready to drop a new single produced by Blockhead. Mm. I don't know what project that's attached to. If it is, I'm sure it is, but can't wait to hear that.
It's interesting you talking about that track, because I saw you post it recently, and of course I tried searching for the track, but he's teasing us. It's not out till next month.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
So that's definitely on the list, as well as, like you say, a Lucid E. I mean, Baldy James, I think he might have had probably, I don't know. He obviously dropped 4 projects last year, so I think he's going to kid it again this year. He easily had, in my opinion, one of the best years last year. Pusha T, another project I didn't mention, that was a great one. Mm. I think he's dropping this year with an album produced by Madlib. If I'm right in seeing that. Yeah. Wow.
Baldy, you know, prayers up for Baldy. I don't know if you guys saw, he was in a
car accident.
Yeah.
In a car accident. Yeah. So not sure what that'll do to his year creatively, but man. Yeah.
That's true.
4 albums in 1 year, and they're all really solid. It's incredible.
Apparently he's sitting on an album with Dilla Beats.
I saw that.
That'll be interesting.
Yeah. So I guess it's all dependent on, like Rob said, how this situation affects this year. But from what I understand, he's doing better.
He's out of the ICU, I think. Mm-hmm. It said, well, I think we did it. We made it.
Indeed.
That went too fast. That went too quick.
It did. I was like, there's no way we're done. And we are. No, seriously, Luke, thank you so much for joining us. This has been fun. I always love these conversations. It's just an opportunity to talk about the music that you love. And so, you know, it's really special, and it's really great to have you on the podcast. We love Fly Fidelity, so keep doing great things.
Yeah, man.
Really appreciate the opportunity to come on here and chopper up with you guys, talk about some of these albums, and looking forward to getting you guys on the show too.
Oh, yeah.
Hey,
we're here.
That'd be great. This has been The Next Movement. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Luke from Fly Fidelity for joining us, and we hope you enjoyed. Peace. Murder done them off on their doorstep, they all swept on the side.